such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito, along with my co-host, Loretta Fralick. We are so happy to have you back with us, listeners, on another episode of Winds of Change. And Loretta and I are sitting in for Father Anthony here on WFND and WSFI-FM, as we do on both Mondays. And so, very happy to have you with us. Loretta, did you have a good weekend?
I had a wonderful weekend.
Excellent.
And
excellent.
I also wanted to say happy anniversary to you, Mary.
To me.
And to me, too.
Oh, is this some sort of anniversary of the show together with us?
No, just the Dobbs decision. It won't
That's
go
right.
away.
No,
it is
won't.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. Yeah.
And it proves nothing is impossible with God.
That is certainly true.
And, you know, people like you, Mary, who have been on the forefront of the life issue since the beginning of time, if that's possible, but you
I'm
know,
not that old.
No, but in all that you bring to
well,
it.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you very much. It's always you know, my privilege to be one of the laborers in the vineyard, as the Lord would have it. So,
well, you're not just one, Mary. I really have often said this about you. When I grow up, I want to be Mary Helen Fiorito because you are so talented, and there's nothing you don't know about the life issue. And I have watched you debate Planned Parenthood, NAREL, and I mean this in all sincerity. You wiped the floor with them.
Oh, well, you know, Loretta, that's very kind of you to say. And again, always my privilege to go where the Lord asks me to go. But I am one of thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have shared their time, their talent, their treasure to build up a culture of life. And we are really fortunate today. We have probably one of the best known bioethicists in the world, and who serves in the Pontifical Academy for Life and is also a law professor at the University of Notre Dame and director of the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the same center. And it is Professor Carter Sneed. Professor Sneed, are you there? Professor Sneed, are you there? Okay. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty here. We will wait until we get Professor Sneed online. So again, Carter Sneed, who he goes by Carter, is a law professor at the University of Notre Dame. He is one of the world's leading public bioethicists and an author. He's quite well published in terms of legal opinions and legal journals, that sort of thing. But also his book, The Case for the Body in public debate and law, is also a must read. It made the Wall Street Journal's top 10 books last year. And Professor Sneed, do we have you now?
I'm here.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Sorry about those technical difficulties. Loretta and I are grateful to you for joining us today to discuss the one-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision. Can you tell us a little bit about the terrific statement that the DeNicola Center released over the weekend, or today actually, to mark and commemorate the anniversary?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, it's a real pleasure to join both of you on this joyful anniversary of Dobbs. We put out a statement in the name of the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame, which said a few things. It first said that we wanted to begin with, to pause and be grateful for the tens of thousands of lives saved by the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, because there were many states that wished to protect the unborn child and her mother from the violence of abortion, and they were forbidden from doing so by the Supreme Court's specious reading of the Constitution in those two cases for almost 50 years.
Right.
So real, I mean, there are very few judicial opinions that save tens of thousands of lives, but this is one such right. opinion.
In just one year.
It's amazing, yeah. And we also wanted to acknowledge the Supreme Court's courage in declaring against enormous amount of social pressure and even a planned assassination of one of the justices,
right.
Justice Kavanaugh, to stand strong and to do the work of a judge, which is to interpret the Constitution in light of its text, history, and the American legal tradition, and declare the obvious proposition that the Constitution doesn't forbid the legal protection of the unborn child from abortion. We protected unborn children from abortion from before the nation's founding up until January 22nd, 1973, and there was a brief 50-year hiatus from that the rightful authority of the people, but the court restored that authority. And then we conclude our statement by sort of rededicating ourselves to working to build a culture of life and a civilization of love where moms and dads and babies, born and unborn, and families get the support and protection that they deserve, both before, during, and after a child is born. And I know that, Mary, that you've been involved in that your entire career and taking care of moms in need and walking with them and helping them and supporting them as the church has done and as you've done. And we got to keep going, and we need to work with those as you do with who don't agree with us on these fundamental questions, and try to figure out ways to create these networks that will support moms, babies, dads, and families.
Well, Professor Snead, what was the one kind of argument or statement that was made by the other side, you know, via social media or what have you, after Dobbs, that most surprised you? Was there any argument that kind of caught you off guard, like, whoa, you know, we didn't expect to hear this from abortion advocates?
After the Dobbs, well, see, on this anniversary, I was struck by something that I read where someone was publicly regretting, and it was funny the way they worded it, 25 or 30,000 instances of women not being able to access legal abortion.
Right.
And that's a very dark way and reductive way about talking about babies who are alive right now, who are in the world and living, breathing, precious babies. And I was sort of struck by that. I was also struck by the immediate focus on the claim, which we all have always heard, that this is going to be devastating for women's health and well-being. Of course, there's no reports of any women dying
right.
after Dobbs.
In fact, there's not one instance.
Texas effectively banned abortion a year before Dobbs, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single maternal mortality attributable to that in Texas. There are cases, and in fact, there are cases of people of basically malpractice of anecdotal cases where doctors. There are reports that doctors aren't giving women the emergency medical care that they are legally entitled to in every state in the country.
Right.
Every law has an exception for the life of the mother. Every law that I'm familiar with has an exception for medical emergencies. Catholic hospitals have been taking care of women who have severe complications in pregnancy or infections
forever. Ectopic pregnancies.
But no, this extraordinary, like immediately we're talking about these exceptional, the media is coordinated with the advocates for abortion and talking almost entirely about the most exceptional cases, cases involving sepsis, cases involving miscarriage management, cases involving ectopic pregnancies, when every law that, every law that I'm familiar with, and I've studied these carefully, as I know you have too,
yeah.
There's not a single legal framework that doesn't permit a physician to provide care to a woman, including delivering a preterm baby when it's necessary to save her life, you know? I've been struck by the amount of coordination, whether intentional or not, between the media and the abortion advocacy community. It's hard to break through.
There does seem to be a lot of collusion, doesn't there, between some in the mainstream media and abortion advocacy groups. It's like they're just taking their press releases and typing up every one of their talking points without any opportunity to refute them.
No, that's right. And you know, it's funny because I actually don't think there's active collusion. I think it just turns out that people that are writing these articles happen to agree with the most extreme abortion advocates in our nation. I mean, they talk about in politics, they talk about 70-30 issues or 90-10 issues, including, you know, bans on partial birth abortion, parental notification, you know, limits on taxpayer funding of abortion. These are things that most people, including pro-choice people, agree with, and a very small percentage of people disagree with. But that very small percentage is almost entirely unanimously represented in the media.
Professor Sneed, this is Loretta, and I really want to thank you for leading your statement off, recognizing the lives of the babies that will live now because these decisions have been overturned. I think that is so often lost in the fight and in the dialogue, and it becomes women, 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 healthcare, 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 and yet you focus on what's right and true, and it's the lives of these babies. And our universe is going to be changed because these babies are going to grow up into young adults and adults, and who knows what purpose and plan God has for them to set our world on fire. So I really think you totally hit the mark. And so my question to you is, where do we need to focus our attention now as Dobbs is has changed abortion and returned it back to the states? Where should we be putting our energies?
Yeah, I think we have to do multiple. Thank you for the question and the comment. We have to do multiple things at once. We need to put in place meaningful legal protections for babies who otherwise would be threatened by abortion. We need to create systems in which women who are experiencing crisis in their pregnancies or feel like they don't have any other options, that we provide them with a sort of love and care and affection and material support that they deserve, that, you know, and we need to work with our state legislators and our congressmen and women to try to find ways to do that. There have actually been some really heartening examples in states that are, you know, considered very conservative states like Tennessee and Texas, where they've extended their postpartum Medicaid care from 60 days to a year, where they've they've given paid maternity leave to state employees. They've given enhanced child tax credits. These are really valuable things that are just beginnings, of course, but they're really important both substantively and also symbolically, because I think what a lot of people don't understand, if they don't know folks who are pro-life or don't have any encounters with people that are pro-life, they probably have a kind of caricature in their mind of what we believe. And the truth is, at the core of what we believe is unconditional love and support and care for every person, every member of the human family, born and unborn. And there's no better or more persuasive or winning message than that. So I just think we have to go out there and boldly and lovingly declare, the inalienable equal value of every human being on the planet, and continue to make that case in a loving and civil way to our friends and neighbors who don't agree with us. Because I think that the only place they're going to hear it is from us. They're not going to hear it on the media. They're not going to hear it, and then they're not going to read it in the newspaper. They're going to get a caricature of someone who is. It's funny. People talk about, you know, the pro-life movement being a bunch of old men. I'm like, I don't know what. If you ever been to the March for Life? It's 90% women. They range in age from high school to, you know, women in their middle age, and it's predominantly a woman's movement,
right.
and that's never portrayed that way in the press.
Well, are there states in which cases are winding their way through the state court system that we need to be watching about and putting those memoraries to?
Absolutely. What the abortion rights advocacy side has essentially unlimited money. They have unlimited money. They have unlimited coordination. They get money from people like Warren Buffett and George Soros and other, you know, billionaires who are passionate about supporting abortion. And what they've done is they have these very high profile and elite legal nonprofits like the Center for Reproductive Rights and the ACLU Reproductive Freedom Project, and they get free services from every white shoe law firm in the country.
Absolutely.
To basically go into states and find the most liberal trial judge they can find, and then make the case that the state constitution in that state, which usually was adopted in the 18th or 19th century when abortion was a crime in that state, somehow has a secret right to abortion in it that no one has ever discerned before. Basically, they're trying to recreate Roe v. Wade in the state Supreme Courts in places like Kentucky and Georgia and Ohio and elsewhere in Indiana where I live. And we really need to pray very hard for the advocates, for the attorneys general and the governors who are defending those laws and trying to promote the obvious proposition, and most importantly for the justice, the state Supreme Court justices, to have the courage and the integrity to say, you know what, even if they like abortion as a policy matter, they shouldn't. You can't write it into the state constitution. It's just not consistent with the rule of law. And so we need to keep that in mind. And we also need to pray for folks who are in those states like Ohio, where there's going to be a referenda, where the abortion rights side are investing millions of dollars, and as I say, they have basically unlimited money. And they essentially have allies in the media and in academia and in big business and in entertainment. And they are trying to shape a narrative and promote abortion, basically an absolute right to abortion in states that are essentially conservative states. And they are doing so with deceptive referenda, and we need to pray for those who are involved in those processes and see if, do grassroots work on our own to try to get the truth out.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have kind of mixed feelings about that, because obviously we need the money to advocate. We need the money to help to not sway the public opinion, but to impress upon the public what the truth is, what the truth about abortion is medically, what the truth about abortion is practically speaking for a woman who has one down the line. I mean, I often cite the Turnaway study, and, you know, I was thinking of it as you were talking about the people who expressed dismay about the babies who are actually born now, you know, I mean, and but when you look at the Turnaway study, you see that was a very famous study done by a very strong abortion advocate at the Guttmacher Institute, Diana Greene Foster, and she talked to about 1,000 women, I think it was, and asked them, who were for whatever reason couldn't get the money together, an abortion clinic was too far for them to drive, et cetera, some other logistical delay kept them from getting an abortion, how they felt, you know, 1 year out, and you saw, you know, very high rates of depression and anxiety and difficulty in meeting the child's needs. But 5 years out, 95% of the women in that study said they were glad they didn't have the abortion. 95%, and that's rarely, if ever, mentioned.
No, it's never mentioned, but it's the most important fact that you, I think, are the best at articulating. And among all the pro-lifers that I'm familiar with, that's something that you frequently draw everyone's attention to. And it's essential, because the so-called Turnaway study is exhibit one in the abortion rights advocacy playbook to show how bad restrictions on abortion are for women's socioeconomic well-being. And as you say, everything about the study, and it's a deeply flawed study in a lot of methodological
right.
ways,
right.
But the fact is, the fundamental point is 95% of those women say they're happy they didn't get abortions. And that to me is the bottom line.
Wow. You know, in your statement, you referenced that the DeNicola Center is proud to be part of the Women and Children First Initiative. Can you just briefly share with our listeners what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So the University of Notre Dame is institutionally committed to building a culture of life. We from the top down, we are a university that explicitly is committed to that goal. And when Dobbs was actually, even when the court granted cert in Dobbs, we knew that the DeNicola Center, as the most important engine of the university's pro-life mission, we needed to do something to try to promote a landscape in which moms and babies and families get the support and care they need. So we created the Women and Children First Initiative, which is an interdisciplinary initiative. It involves the study, research, teaching, service, public engagement on a wide variety of questions involving, you know, of course, law and public policy, but also questions relating to health care and housing and addiction treatment and racism and racial justice and all the questions that come into play when you're trying to build an authentic and comprehensive culture of life. And one of the first projects we're working on is a maternal group home study to try, in partnership with a partner at Notre Dame, another organization at Notre Dame. We're basically taking a look at six maternal group homes around the country to see what works, what doesn't, and then we're going to disseminate that information and share it with other maternal group homes and those who sponsor them and who administer them. So that's one example. We also have multiple, and Mary, we're blessed to have Mary involved in this initiative.
As
the Cardinal George Fellow of the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture, we have multiple panels, and we just had a great panel on the role of the pro-life doctor and dispelling myths about maternal mortality and access to abortion, showing that in fact abortion is it's unsupported to claim that abortion is safer than childbirth. That's a claim you hear constantly repeated, and it's never actually been demonstrated scientifically. It's based on one very deeply flawed study with incomplete data sets and comparing things that are not meant to be compared to each other incoherently. And in any event, so our job is to try to, again, both shape the minds and hearts of students and faculty on our campus at Notre Dame, but also to go out into the public square and be Notre Dame's voice on behalf of the unborn child and her mother and her family.
Well, one of the things that the DeNicola Center does that I gain so much from, even despite all my many years in the pro-life movement, I always learn something new every year I attend the Vita Institute. And that just wrapped up for another year, and I was so blessed, Carter, to be able to spend that week with you all. And just heard an amazing number of experts that you managed to get into one room in South Bend, Indiana, and so that people can ask them questions and hear the kind of information that you're talking about that one flawed study that is the basis of this, abortion is safer than childbirth claim. Can you tell, for our listeners who wouldn't be familiar with the Vita Institute, what it is and again, this sending forth Notre Dame's voice into the rest of the country?
Absolutely. And so Mary, for listeners, Mary is a faculty member of our Vita Institute. The Vita Institute is a week-long intellectual formation program. It's kind of an intensive course or sort of an intellectual boot camp for leaders of the pro-life movement from around the world. And so what we do is we gather 50 or so participants who are the students, if you will, but they're very accomplished people. They're from we had folks from Ireland and Poland and Latin America and Africa. Over the course of this week, to sit in a large classroom at the University of Notre Dame, beautiful campus, and to hear lectures on embryology from Dr. Maureen Condick, or to hear philosophical lectures from Francis Beckwith, or lectures on the law from me and my colleague Sharif Gurgis on international human rights, Paolo Carrazza and others, end-of-life decision-making. We had sessions on the medical claims about whether the relative safety of abortion and childbirth. We had a panel on what kinds of public policies are best for mothers and babies and families. We had an expert panel on that question. We had a panel on religious freedom and conscience protections in the context of abortion. Mark Rienzi, the president of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, delivered that lecture. We had a terrific panel discussion on public opinion polling and the politics of abortion and messaging. Michael New, for example, was a great contributor to that conversation. He's an expert from the Catholic University of America. And so it's a week where these people who are already sort of at the top of their profession as advocates, as people caring for moms and babies and families in either pregnancy resource centers or in post-abortion healing or in maternal group homes. Some of the folks are actually legislators. Some of the folks work in Europe in significant roles. They all are very high executive level folks, and basically we give them an opportunity to deepen their understanding academically, but then also, and this is just as important, to network with one another and to get to know each other. And we've got about 1,000 alums now in the Vita Institute we started in 2009, and we do little mini Vitas in various places. There's you could go to our YouTube page, the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture, and see some of the lectures from the online version that we did during COVID. But it's our sort of one of the ways in which we try to use our resources as the greatest Catholic university in the world to help educate our friends and those who are leading the movement and in caring for moms and babies and families and promoting respect for life and the law and public policy.
Well, it's a great gift. Again, I thought I knew everything there was to know about abortion, but every year there's some new angle, there's some new study or presentation or, you know, area of expertise that, you know, I hadn't heard before. And it's well worth your time if you're someone who really wants to, as Professor Sneed, you know, pointed out, go to this intellectual boot camp for a week. It really is well worth your time. And, you know, maybe check out some of the videos on the DeNicola Center website, and that could help you perhaps ascertain if that would be a good fit for you to come and be with the group in person next year. So, well, Professor Sneed, we've kept you, I think, 5 minutes longer than I promised, but will you give us an outgoing description before we go to our break of your book for our listeners? Kind of fumbling around with the best way to describe it, but I think it's best to let you do that so they can understand what a contribution that was.
Thanks.
To the movement.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, the book is called What It Means to Be Human, The Case for the Body in Public Bioethics, and it was published by Harvard University Press in 2020, and then the paperback came out in 2022. And you can find it on Amazon.com. Just look for my name, Carter Sneed, What It Means to Be Human. And the book is basically a kind of extended argument for how to think about public bioethical questions, questions involving abortion. I have a whole chapter on abortion. I have a chapter on assisted reproduction. I have a chapter on end-of-life decision-making and assisted suicide. And the fundamental question that I propose one should ask when you're analyzing these laws and public policies that are under debate is, what vision of the human person and human flourishing underlie the legal arguments and the legal doctrines under consideration? And that's because, and that may be surprising to some people, people don't think, well, that seems like a kind of abstract moral question. Is it right? Morality and law? Aren't they supposed to be different? And the answer is, of course, no. All law is irreducibly grounded in a moral framework and a principle of justice. All law aims to promote some good and to avoid some kind of harm. But even more deeply than that, law is, at bottom, for the protection and flourishing of persons. That's what law is for. And so law has to have an operating definition of what persons are and what their flourishing consists in. And I take a look at the current state of the law, pre-Dobbs, in abortion and the other areas of law, and I find that in many of these instances, the law actually has pretty impoverished and, I would say, problematic assumptions about what and who persons are. It assumes that it defines people according to the exercise of their will, the exercise right. of their mind. It leaves behind entirely our friends and neighbors who are disabled, children, the elderly, et cetera, because it fails to take seriously the fact that we are not merely disembodied wills, but in fact, as human beings, we are embodied. We're incarnate. We're incarnational beings. We are bodies. We're what philosopher Hans Jonas called a psychophysical unity, a dynamic and mysterious and interesting integrated combination of mind and body. And having a body, not having a body, but being a living body, stands us in a certain kind of relationship to one another. It makes us vulnerable and therefore dependent upon one another. And certain kinds of things follow from that, unchosen obligations and unearned privileges. And what people need, I argue, is not simply the radical freedom to impose their will on others, but rather what we need are what my colleague Alistair McIntyre calls networks of uncalculated giving and graceful receiving. Mm-hmm. Networks made up of people who are willing to care for other people without counting the cost. And the most obvious example of this are parents and children. And that looms very large for the debates over abortion, assisted reproduction, and end-of-life decision-making.
Right. And then, too, you know, that book was important when it came out 2 years ago, but even I'm so glad to hear it's out in paperback as well. But it's even more so now as we're having even more in-depth conversations about, you know, what the human body is. Is it immutable, or is it something that you are given as a gift, you know, about changing it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we're just coming out of Pride weekend as well, and very, very troubling to see how some of those arguments are developing, particularly vis-a-vis children. And so I'm so glad your book is now accessible to even more people, because I think it's really important to understanding that debate as well as the abortion debate.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think now that especially that Dobbs has returned the question to the political branches of regulating abortion, I think the fundamental discussion we have to have in that space is, you know, who are we and what do we owe to each other? And that includes the child in the womb and the homeless person and the migrant and you know, et cetera, et cetera. The book is not a Catholic book exactly. It doesn't make right. arguments rooted in the Catholic faith, but it is. I'm a Catholic, and it's the most important thing to me. And so everything in the book is comes from that place. And And so I think that it's, hopefully it'll make a good contribution to the debates.
And, you know, Professor Snead, I think that what is so important as you are listing the other reasons to read this book, to understand who we are, and we have spent so much time on the abortion debate that we have not taken that same energy and put it into the needed topics of allowing children to change their gender, allowing, you know, ignoring the homeless. There's been so much energy poured into, you know, my body, my rights, versus all these other social issues that are worthy of a Catholic perspective and a Catholic solution. And I think that one of the things that happens with your book is that it will direct our thoughts in that area, in those areas that need our Catholic input.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, and I appreciate that endorsement very much.
And again, can you give us the name of the book, please?
Yeah, the name of the book is What It Means to Be Human, The Case for the Body in Public Bioethics, published by Harvard University Press, easily found on Amazon.com. Just Carter Snead, What It Means to Be Human. You could just put that in Google. If you don't want to use Amazon, you could do Barnes & Noble or any wherever you like to buy books.
Yeah.
You're welcome to buy books.
Maybe,
yep, exactly.
Maybe even your local parish bookstore or Catholic bookstore in your
right.
area.
So. Yeah, I know they carry it at the Catholic Information Center in D.C.
Oh,
I don't know
excellent.
About,
good. So. And we have listeners nationwide, so hopefully someone who is listening today will be able to take advantage of that knowledge. So Professor Carter Snead of the University of Notre Dame's Law School and the Nicholas Center for Ethics and Culture, thanks so much for being a guest on today's show. Wonderful to have you again.
Thank you both. Great to be with you.
And listeners, please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich sitting in for Father Anthony here on EWTN's New Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Radio, at 88.5 FM and AM 750 WNDZ.
I'm Dr. Peter Howard, founder of the Fulton Sheen Movement. On July 9th, join me and Father Tom Loya at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen for an historic rally to fan the flame of love and devotion to Venerable Fulton Sheen. We need Fulton Sheen's intercession and guidance now more than ever. We're gathering to pray for his cause and especially for the Holy Spirit to move the church to set a new date for his beatification. Starting at 10 a.m., come and pray with us. Enjoy a delicious cookout and hear inspiring talks on Sheen by Father Loya and myself. Activities are planned for the whole family. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com for a complete schedule and to sign our global petition to unpause the cause of this great prophet for our times. Co-sponsored by WFSI, this rally is your chance to make a difference. I'll see you all on July 9th.
Bye now, and God love you.
You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Freilich
on Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button, or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link. St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststandschurch.org.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in today for Father Anthony, as we do every Monday, here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and at 88.5 FM WSFI. So thank you so much for joining us. And Loretta, in addition to, well, we had, of course, you know, the Pride Parade over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I saw so many videos, both online, but then also from some local sources, let's put it that way, of full frontal nudity.
I know.
I mean, everywhere. Like, there was a kind of elderly, I would say probably in his 60s, slightly overweight man, just in his, like, you know, white underwear, twerking like children and stuff. And you could see his, you know, genitals kind of hanging out of his underwear. It was disgusting.
Miley Cyrus is not a good look for somebody over 20.
No one, you know, and you, and then down Wells.
I know.
Our friend Dan Proft, down the dial from us at AM 560, he tweeted out something showing a naked bike ride. Stark naked men and women going down Wells Street on, was it Friday night or Saturday night? It must have been Saturday night. And I mean, you know, where can you take your children to escape this sort of stuff?
You could take them to the beach, Mary.
Well, yeah, yes. Well, the only place beach I... But I could take them to the beach near your beach house where they would be safe. But no, I wouldn't go down to North Avenue Beach on Pride Weekend.
No.
I wouldn't go anywhere near
it. I wouldn't go out on Pride Weekend.
No.
I'd go to the safe places that I know.
Yeah.
And there are friends of ours, Mary, that God bless them. They are moving through the crowd, passing out information about the rosary.
Good.
Because one of the things that I pretty much learned when I was working, and because I worked with a lot of young people, they are not necessarily proponents of the gay pride parade, but it's kind of fun to take advantage of the debauchery for one weekend.
Yeah.
And so I think people, when they see the pride parade so crowded, I think there's a lot more looky-loos, as we used to call them in the state's attorney's office, you know, the witness that shows up because they're just kind of checking it out. And but I don't think that we should be exposing people to what happened at the gay pride parade. But it's really sad. Because the question remains, what are you proud of?
Right.
Isn't pride a sin?
Yeah.
And what are you proud of? You know, being dressed in, I mean, the makeup is grotesque.
Yeah.
I am unsure who told people who dress in drag that they look attractive.
Right.
But I'll take it back for them. Because it is not attractive. And again, you know, that white base, it looks like kabuki theater.
I know. It's very distasteful. And I just don't think, you know, if gay people and lesbians and, you know, they want to live their lives as citizens, you know, I just remember when the whole gay marriage debate was going on and every one of the people who was out there sort of talking about this from the advocacy group saying nothing in your life will change. We simply want to have the right to marriage so that we can visit loved ones in the hospital, inherit property, blah, blah, blah.
Liar, pants on fire.
This will not affect you in any way. And now look, we have, you know, I was just thinking this morning about Jack Phillips, who I had the opportunity to meet a couple of years ago. He is the baker from the Masterpiece Bake Shop. And so he's an evangelical Christian, and as an evangelical who runs a bakery, was well known in his community. There were just certain kind of cakes he didn't make. He didn't make stag party cakes. He didn't make divorce cakes. Like, that's a thing. You get a cake and, like, then it's cut in half or something and you celebrate your divorce. I know.
I'm still coming to terms with those parents that don't give their child sugar until their first birthday. And then there are all these pictures of this
kid just, like,
stuffing
a
cake in their face.
They call it a smash cake. It even has a name now.
Oh, my.
But, you know, he didn't even do Halloween cakes. I mean, there were just certain. And so this couple came in. It's fairly clear that he was chosen specifically because they knew he wasn't going to make them.
He was set up.
And he said, you know, they never discussed whether or not, you know, what he believed in gay marriage or anything. He simply said, oh, I don't do those. In the same way he would have said to a couple who come in and say, we would like a giant Halloween cake, I don't do those. And he closed the book. And then within hours, I mean, terrible death threats. I mean, including one time where his little 4-year-old grandson was in the bakery with him, and the caller said, I can see that little boy with you. And, you know, it would be terrible if anything happened to him, wouldn't it? I mean, outright, so he had to hide him until the police got there. Just terrifying.
But, Mary, here we're talking about putting a man out of business.
Yes.
Which is wrong. However, the other part that they told us was men having sex with boys. Okay,
right.
Listeners, if there's tender ears out there, cover them. They told us that was never going to be part of the agenda. And yet, look, it is part of the agenda.
Yeah.
So, you know, the part that I need all of our listeners to understand, we love our brothers and sisters in the gay community, but I am obligated by Christ to tell the truth in love.
Right.
So if I really love you, I can't just let it go.
No, of course not.
When asked, I must say why you are doing what you are doing is wrong and why it is wrong.
Right.
And gently and with love and with courage. And, you know, I really was so, I'm so just touched by that comment that, is it Patty Pichetti Bayer or Patty Bayer?
Oh, Andrea Pichetti Bayer.
Andrea Pichetti Bayer. She told us, be aware, be alert, know what's going on.
Right.
And really, if our listeners could do one thing, be aware, be alert, know what's going on.
Yeah.
This is not coming to somebody else's backyard in Chicago. This is in your community.
Right.
Why, in the neighboring town, in where I live.
Right.
Straight down the middle of this little teeny tiny little street, Madison Avenue, is a gay pride parade flag.
Yeah.
Now, why do I need a gay pride parade flag for me to go out and have dinner or go to a bar with my friends and have a glass of wine or two? It's becoming so, and they are saying that there's a lot of negative pushback.
Finally.
Yes.
So that's very. So who was saying that there was the businesses?
The
are
newspapers.
Oh,
the news. Based on that,
I think when it became obvious that this was never about being just left alone and living your life in private. This was about dismantling the American family, dismantling the cornerstone, really, of any healthy society, which is a healthy marriage.
It's what brought Rome down.
Right, exactly.
The debauchery in Rome is what brought them down.
And now that it's very specifically directed towards children, when we have, you know, instead of pedophilia, we're calling it a minor attracted person.
I know.
And, you know, and you see... It was interesting. One of the reflections I read over the weekend was from a gay man who, you know, in his 40s and talked about, you know, the first gay pride parade he went to. And he said, I was so scared to tell my parents, but I knew by the time I was out of high school that I was gay and what everybody talks about. He said, now I go to the gay pride parade. He said, I feel not at home at all. I don't believe in minors transitioning. I don't believe in the way in which the gay community presents itself at the gay pride, some aspects of the gay community, right? I mean, there was the one float that had the guy in like a bondage costume and somebody else was pretending to whip him.
I
mean, this is not...
I know where all the sequins have gone, Mary.
Yeah, well, I mean, but his point was, I'm a gay man and he said he also knew lesbian women who felt the same way, that like... They are being sort of identified right out of this community, whatever it is, with all of its, you know, consonants and things. And he said, I just feel like there's not a place for me in the movement anymore. And now you have, there's a terrific commentator who is English, lives in London. His name is Oli something or other. I'll have to look it up. But he is, you know, a very out practicing gay man, but very adamantly opposed to this targeting of children.
Yes.
In fact, speaking of targets, Target, when it had released their Pride collection with the tucking bathing suits for, you know, transgender women, at the front of the store, directly targeted to children, marketed to children. He said, for goodness sake, these are children. You know,
but you know what else he did?
What?
He put on one of those tuck-in bathing suits.
Oh, no, that was...
And walked around...
Alex Stein.
Okay, and walked around the store.
Funny, yes, and he...
Asking, how do I look in this bathing
suit? Yes, I know. That's 99 Alex Stein,
who
is a comedian.
Well, he was really
funny. Very provocative. He goes to you know, school board meetings in particular and city meetings.
Okay.
When they're taking comments from the public and will, like, walk in, you know, wearing a tuckable. But he was walking around Target asking the employees, you know, is this working the way it's supposed to, my tuckable, you know, bathing suit? And so, it's interesting to me that you're saying... For the most part, it's gay men, but, you know, in her book, Irreversible Damage, I'm trying to think of what the author's name is. Oh, I'm spacing today. Schreiber, is that her name? Anyway, we'll come back to her in a second, but she interviews a lesbian couple who have a daughter who wanted to, when she was 12 or 13, came home and told her two mothers that she was trans. And that she wanted to be a boy. And, you know, they were laughing, thinking, you know, we're lesbians. It's not like we're not open to different sexual expression. But this was like, we were like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Mary.
And there was one girl kind of in the, Abigail Schreier, that's who wrote the book, Irreversible Damage, which I highly recommend. There was one kind of queen bee in this group of girls who was getting all these girls to, you know, she was kind of terrifying them into telling their parents they wanted to trans. And they had to, this lesbian couple moved. They moved to another city to get their 12-year-old daughter away from this girl who was trying to trans her.
Mary, our battle is not against flesh and blood. Yep. It is against principalities and powers. And there is a demonic target on these children to steal them from the purpose and plan that God has for them in their lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we can talk about, I mean, there are so many examples. But you want to talk about the one that I'm, like, livid about?
What's that?
Really upset?
Yeah, yeah, tell me.
Hunter Biden. His felonies dropped down to misdemeanors. Hunter Biden and his tweet to some Chinese national that he's attempting to extort money from.
Yeah, it's really bad.
For me and my dad, who's sitting right next to me, so when's the money coming? And our government is doing nothing.
I know. And he was at some cocktail party with his wife. And did you know that Joe Biden has a granddaughter he's never even seen? This is one of the children that Hunter Biden fathered.
She's Hunter Biden's stripper girlfriend that he has denied has never seen. He has never seen her. He has been ordered to pay her support by a judge right now.
Yeah.
But
he's not paying not paying the child support.
But the whole family totally ignores this child.
Yeah. Her grandfather is the president of the United States. They've never even bothered to meet her. It's just absolutely, you know, mind-boggling to me, especially, you know, as he's always talking about being a Catholic and what a good Catholic he is.
Well, he gets his rosary beads on every chance he has.
Of course he does, but he you know, his son fathers a child, and it's not, you know, you get the sense, tell me if I'm a little off base here, but you get the sense that they probably would have been happy if that child hadn't been born.
Well, I would get that sense, except luckily they don't seem to have any interest
in the child whatsoever.
And well, they just want her to go away. I don't think they care if she was born or not. They just want her to go away.
Yeah.
You know, that's the honorable, upstanding, walking beside our president every chance there's a photo op.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden. And it really... You think our nation would be ashamed as to how he portrays
himself. Awful. He was, I mean, not just a drug. I mean, and I have, you know, I've had issues of addiction within my extended family. And so I have tremendous sympathy. I know what it's like to live with someone who
Mary,
has
anybody
an
who says they don't have addiction issues in their family is lying.
Well, right. So anyway, but, you know, he has a drug addiction, an alcohol addiction, but also a porn addiction.
Yes.
I mean, he would go on these, like, crystal meth ramps and then would be with prostitutes all weekend, all this other kind of stuff. And
We should get the Hahnemans on. They're a couple that...
Bruce and Jeannie Hahneman, yes.
Yes, that
that's a
pornography
great idea. Right.
came
they
into
do.
Their family through Bruce.
Right.
And it is a remapping of the brain. It is an addiction.
Yeah, reclaim. Reclaim. Excellent. Oh, that's a terrific idea.
It is an
idea.
Addiction worse than cocaine.
Yes, I know. It fundamentally changes the structure of your brain. And the younger a boy looks at it, the more brain damage he's going to have. But you can do that, as you say. You can do it. That is a fantastic
idea.
There's
a Catholic one and a kind of secular one.
Yeah,
secular
but we
one.
Need to do that. So let's mental
I,
note. For the
I
next,
will,
we're not here next Monday because it is the 4th
Jeannie
of July.
See.
The 4th of July holiday.
Yeah.
But after that, maybe the following Monday, we could have them in. But a good email website group kind of thing to get. I'm sorry, it's called PIT, and it stands for Parents with Inconvenient Truth About Trans, P-I-T-T. And so it's like an email service you sign up for, and you get a kind of a different story every day from a family who is either have a child who's detransitioning, or they tell the story of how their child came home from school one day and they figured out that in school they'd been known by a different name for 2 years and was dressing differently at school. You know, just awful stuff. But it's all, I mean, and it is a widely diverse group of parents, some of them who have no problem with you know, homosexual marriage or anything like that, but who are very much against the manipulation of children when it comes to this kind of stuff. So again, it's PITT, P-I-T-T, Parents with Inconvenient Truth About Trans. So, but Loretta, one other video that kind of went viral over the weekend, and if you haven't seen it, we can table this and talk about it the next time we're live together, but was this crime that happened, I think, in Greektown, or somewhere. There was a man got in an argument with a woman at a restaurant, like a takeout kind of thing, and there were a bunch of people in line. Somebody started taping it, and he's a big man, you know, and he's saying, you know, you say one more thing, you know, witch, and then I'm going to punch you, I'm going to hit you, you know, really threatening her, and he clocks her. He clocks this woman, and she just goes down, and then he keeps at it. It is like watching Mike Tyson in the ring. This guy is filled with rage, and this woman's 14-year-old son.
She goes and tells him to come back and shoot him.
Correct, to come back and shoot him. And that he shot him, and then they pursued the mother and the child, apparently, pursued him.
Yes, the child is facing juvenile charges.
So can we talk about, I mean, you were a criminal prosecutor.
Could we talk about that maybe in 2 weeks?
Well, 2 weeks, yeah.
Because I have not seen the video. I've just heard the stories.
Okay. All right. There was extensive coverage.
I would hate
coverage.
To comment on it because it wouldn't. I don't.
And there's some additional, you know, maybe additional information will come forward because it was our friend Dan Proft covered it on his show this morning, and it went a good almost 45 minutes with people calling in. There was a lot of, I think there are some details that may come out. Like, for example, who was filming all of that?
Well, that's not going to make any difference because you're capturing an event.
Right.
It's the action of the actors.
And you know, when you look at the reasonable man standard, and we probably would say reasonable person standard now, but, you know, they were in an enclosed space. This man was violently assaulting this woman. I mean, it is awful.
But the all these assault other men, was, Mary?
Yes?
The assault ended. The assault ended.
Yeah, when he shot him the first time, I think.
The assault ended.
Yeah.
He was no longer punching her when she walked out and told her son to shoot him.
Yeah. No, so, no, she did. No. And I thought.
So
I,
that's
yeah.
it. That's it.
Yeah.
It's game over. Mm. She was no longer threatened by him. Mm-hmm. She was able to get up and walk away, from what I understand. And she told her son to go back in and shoot him.
Yeah.
So the son had no fear.
Right.
Of the man. So he may be in trouble for assaulting her. He may have charges filed for assaulting her. But
well, I think he's dead.
I didn't know.
No, he's
again,
dead.
I didn't see the video.
No, we'll table that and we'll come back and talk about that next week. But let's go quickly to our final break. And then when we come back, we'll talk
summer
a
tips.
Little bit about summer safety. So listeners, please don't go away.
I'm Dr. Peter Howard, founder of the Fulton Sheen Movement. On July 9th, join me and Father Tom Loya at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen for an historic rally to fan the flame of love and devotion to Venerable Fulton Sheen. We need Fulton Sheen's intercession and guidance now more than ever. We're gathering to pray for his cause and especially for the Holy Spirit to move the church to set a new date for his beatification. Starting at 10 a.m., come and pray with us. Enjoy a delicious cookout and hear inspiring talks on Sheen by Father Loya and myself. Activities are planned for the whole family. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com for a complete schedule and to sign our global petition to unpause the cause of this great prophet for our times. Co-sponsored by WFSI, this rally is your chance to make a difference. I'll see you all on July 9th.
Bye now, and God love you.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Freilich
on Winds of Change.
I'm Dr. Peter Howard, founder of the Fulton Sheen Movement. On July 9th, join me and Father Tom Loya at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen for an historic rally to fan the flame of love and devotion to Venerable Fulton Sheen. We need Fulton Sheen's intercession and guidance now more than ever. We're gathering to pray for his cause and especially for the Holy Spirit to move the church to set a new date for his beatification. Starting at 10 a.m., come and pray with us. Enjoy a delicious cookout and hear inspiring talks on Sheen by Father Loya and myself. Activities are planned for the whole family. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com for a complete schedule and to sign our global petition to unpause the cause of this great prophet for our times. Co-sponsored by WFSI, this rally is your chance to make a difference. I'll see you all on July 9th.
Bye now, and God love you.
Welcome back, listeners, and we're here to talk now about some summer tips for safety for our family and our, especially our children. And, you know, I really, Mary, have to tell you, I am so touched by the freedom with which you exercise your Facebook account. And what prompted this show segment was that you were generous enough to share your Facebook page for prayers for a boy who was found at the bottom of the pool.
Yeah, and obviously, a very sad little five-year-old boy named
Lincoln has gone home to God. But, you know, we wanted to talk to our listeners, especially with 4th of July weekend coming up. We wanted to talk to our listeners about some water safety tips. But
summer safety tips.
Summer safety
tips. More broadly, yes.
But before we go, this summer safety tip that I found just phenomenal. Just kind of researching tips and that kind of stuff. If you go to a, it's recommended, I don't know by who, but if you go to an amusement park or like a festival, place where there's going to be a lot of people and you are bringing your child.
Right.
I never thought of this, but it's suggested that you take a picture of your child as you're going into that festival, and which I thought was so clever. I mean, you may not want it for your high schoolers. They'll probably balk at it. But your younger kids would love it, I think. They'll enjoy having their picture taken. But what the person who suggested this said, you have an immediate reference if something happens to your child. You have an actual picture taken that night, and you've got the clothes they're in.
Right. That's a brilliant idea.
Isn't that brilliant?
That's a terrific idea.
Top summer safety tip for kids.
Yeah. Well, I do recall that there was one case that was kidnapping from Disney World, I think. And and within minutes, the kidnappers had taken this kid inside a bathroom and changed all his clothes.
Yep.
And were parading him out. And I think it was caught on camera or something. They didn't catch him, but that's how quickly they did it. Within minutes, it was like, terrifying. But also, and you'll hear this, you know, we had some 90-degree days last week. Please, 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 please always check your back seat.
Yes.
To make certain that there is not a pet there, but more importantly, not a child there. And I know, listen, I have been there when you are exhausted from, you've been up in the middle of the night with a sick child or a sick parent or what have you. And it is very easy to forget you've got a little one in the back seat of the car. And it is extremely dangerous inside a hot car. The temperature gets very hot, very fast, and can become lethal within a matter of minutes.
Right.
So it always, you know, make a mental note to yourself, put a, I don't know, a sticker on your dashboard or something that says
always
check.
They said throw something you always want, you know, like your purse, your cell phone.
Right, put it in the back seat.
Put it in the back seat.
Put your purse in the back seat. Put your cell phone in the back seat. Exactly. Your briefcase, what have you, so that you have to turn around and look at that back seat before you go. And, you know, oh, my gosh, a news story I heard a couple of summers ago. It was a man, and he was just exhausted. And he drove, this was in Boston, he drove to whatever the tube or whatever they call it in Boston. Yeah. And got out, parked in his usual spot. And then when he's on the train, he realizes the baby is there.
Oh, my gosh.
And the 911 call just would make your heart stop. This man is hysterical. And they didn't charge him. They could have, but they didn't because, they, you know, he called the minute and they were able to locate the car fairly quickly because he parks in the same spot every day. And they got there in time to save that child. But I will never forget the terror in that man's
Well, it's 4th of July, too, so we want you to be careful about fireworks around your, especially your little ones. Don't be lighting them off. Sparklers are hot.
Yep. And never, ever, ever leave a child unattended near a pool or near the beach because of riptides. So
yes.
We will not be with you next Monday because we will be taking some well-deserved time off with our families for the 4th of July holiday. We wish you all a wonderful 4th, and we'll see you the following Monday. This has been Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on EWTN's new voice for Catholic radio, WSFI 88.5 FM and AM 750 WNDZ.
Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.